Hello, and welcome to our Secular Overeaters podcast series, where you'll hear from speakers who have found recovery from food and other addictions without God. For additional information, go to secularovereaters.org. And now let's get to today's podcast.
Welcome to the Secular Overeaters Comparative 12 Steps Study Group. My name is AJ, and I'm a compulsive eater and the facilitator for today. The purpose of this group is to discuss the 12 steps, one at each meeting, and to share our personal experiences with the step or anything related to the theme of the step. Many of us are inspired by the 12-step approach, but find that some of the original language and concepts don't align with our personal beliefs. During this meeting, we will read several different interpretations of the steps and discuss, as the varied individuals we are, what makes sense to us and what helps our recovery. As always, please take what you like and leave the rest. This group does not allow crosstalk. This group does allow crosstalk, pardon me, but please make sure it's supportive. We don't have time limits on these shares, so please be aware of how many people are in the meeting and be mindful of the length of your share. Okay, this month we'll be discussing step four. We will be reading eight versions of the step, the OA Traditional, Freethinker, Buddhist, Cleveland Atheist, Humanist, Practical, Proactive, and SOS, Secular Organization for Sobriety. These sources can be found in the literature and websites listed in the chat and in the guide link. Please take a turn reading a version of the step and say pass when you are finished. I'll call on hands in the order raised.
Carla, compulsive eater, binge eater, OA principal, courage, traditional OA freethinker and Buddhist, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves.
Jenny?
Cleveland, search honestly and deeply within ourselves to know the exact nature of our actions, thoughts, and emotions. Humanist, we have made a list of the situations in which we are most likely to eat. Pass.
Eve?
Practical, made a comprehensive list of our resentments, fears, and harmful actions. Proactive, I examined my life with honesty, searching for patterns in how I've been relating to people and situations. SOS, I make a searching and fearless inventory of myself, of my strengths and weaknesses. I choose not to permit problems to overwhelm me, rather to focus on personal growth and the unconditional acceptance of others and myself.
We are now open for discussion about the steps. What does step four mean to you? And what are your impressions of the different versions we just read? Please raise your hand when you're ready for a turn, and please allow everyone a chance to talk before speaking again. Who would like to begin? Jenny.
Hi, Jenny, sugar addict and compulsive eater. There's always something in each of these steps that I find helpful. I like the principle of courage because I really do believe in the searching and fearless inventory of ourselves, not the moral part, but I do really like doing a deep dive, and I do think it takes courage to look at those things. I think my favorite one on here is probably the proactive step. I examine my life with honesty, searching for patterns and how I've been relating to people and situations. And when I did this step, I didn't do the columns the way they have in the big book. I just started thinking about all the important people in my life, and just trying to see and writing about them and, you know, what has happened, and tried to see common threads. And then that helped me figure out, some of my default behaviors that I might want to change. And I've been working the steps for 8 years now. I think I've calmed down on a lot of things, but it's not completely disappeared. But anyway, I do really like this step. And I think for me, it's been probably the most helpful step of all of them. Pass.
I'm AJ. I'm a compulsive eater and sugar addict. I like SOS because it incorporates the traditional and brings something to mind that I really want to focus on. It says, searching in fearless inventory of my strengths and weaknesses, I choose not to permit problems to overwhelm me. That's a big one for me. Rather to focus on personal growth and the unconditional acceptance of others and myself. That's another huge part for me. Would someone else like to share? Carla?
In thinking about the SOS and talking about not permitting problems to overwhelm me, that is a big thing for me. I'm pretty new, so I have not gotten to step four yet, but I do think this is going to be a very helpful step for me. I have tended to kind of fall back on the bipolar side of me rather than taking responsibility. So, I like that. And I think that'll be a big helpful thing for me to start kind of putting into my life. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to share before we go to, okay, Eve?
Hi, Eve, compulsive eater. I just finished working step four for the first time. And something I found really valuable and that I'm seeing represented in all these different versions is the idea of sort of developing a full picture of who you are, your strengths and your weaknesses and your actions, thoughts and emotions and the source of those, and really, really building on your understanding of who you are and how you behave. Because I feel like some of the very traditional routes I've seen for someone like me who is who has some childhood trauma, it can be very easy to be overwhelmed by shame in this process. And by taking into account your sort of your strengths as well, like I took into account my values and my joys and my attributes, as well as my traits that need work and fears and resentments. And I just think that essence is really, really helpful, is to take a full picture of who you are, because then you can work using your strengths to resolve the things that you feel like you need to resolve. Yeah.
Thank you, Eve. And Tam?
Hi, I'm Tam. I'm a compulsive overeater. I always try to say this one particular thing every time I'm at a fourth step meeting for newcomers. And that is, when I did my first fourth step in the 80s, I had 63 pages of resentments. And when I did a fourth step about a year ago, I had trouble coming up with resentments. And that's because I believe steps 1 through 3 help you get abstinent, and 4 through 9 keep you abstinent. And because it provides that personality change sufficient to recover. And when I did the fourth step this time, what I found is that I had all kinds of fears that I wasn't really aware of. And for me, that's that continuing process of peeling the onion and having more revealed. That's all. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Tam. Diana, excuse me.
Hi, Diana, compulsive overeater and alcoholic. So many of you know that I've, completely revolutionized my life and moved here to Italy. And in the last, 4 years since the lockdown, et cetera, have managed to pack on 50 pounds. And I really feel like I've been in hiding. And really grateful that I'm back at the 12 steps. And I really feel that in the last couple of months, there's been a revolutionary change, which I really do appreciate. And I recognize that I've tried to be someone I'm not. That I've kind of, without getting into too many specifics, but you know, I really like the person I am or the person that I was. And I feel that with the food, I was just squashing that person down. And I would say that I eat my words, you know, because I didn't want to verbalize or communicate what was really going on with me. So I feel like in the last few months, I've been able to change that with the grace of coming back to these meetings and working the steps. So, and I've really, you know, appreciate the secular approach and looking at, and I feel like that seagull is about to crash into my window. Sorry about that. You know, the way that I've been, my interactions with people. And just the other night, I was at this event and there was a break in the festivities. And at the halftime or whatever you want to call it, they come out with the food, which are always, you know, homemade baked goods. And I'm in Italy and that's all they do is like cook here. And you know, the last couple of times it was like, yeah, the treats came out and I didn't have to go dashing over to them because I could deal with the people and not have to use the food to shove down how I was feeling about the people in the room that I didn't want to deal with. So being back here has given me tools to deal with people again and to deal with life on life's terms. So I don't know if any of that made sense, but that's where I'm at. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Diana. Okay, Dina.
Thank you. I am Dina, compulsive overeater. At the moment, my life is a bit chaotic and upside down. I am traveling for my work, and I just realized the last few weeks how important extensive control is for me. The first year post my surgery was okay, and I had a fair amount of control with routines and being at home and my caregiver. And now that I'm traveling, I had problems with my own health. My caregiver was extremely sick. And I just went overboard and ate what was there and what I could order. And of course, that is not healthy food for me. So humanists, we have made a list of the situation in which we are most likely to eat. I realized that this is such a big opportunity for me to look at the whole issue of control, my whole life control, not just with my eating. My eating is just a symptom of my anxiety because of the loss of control that I feel. It was difficult, yes, but I didn't have to do all the things that I did. And I look back now, and when I reflect and journal, I realize that I was so cocooned, so safe in my bubble where I was at home, and I celebrated a slow weight loss, but a steady, because I was making changes. And now that I'm traveling, it just flipped over and everything went wrong that basically could go wrong. I'm slowly picking up my routine again. We'll start work again tomorrow after 2 weeks just being. So yes, to make a list of situations in which I want to eat, I realize it's not just to eat. I must go much further, and it will lead me to other anxiety behavior too. Thank you.
Thank you, Dina. Would anyone else like to share before we turn off the recording?
This is Wendy. I'll say a few words. I am terrified of step four. And that's amazing. That word courage popped out to me. I hadn't understood that that was the principle. And as a lot of us grew up thinking I'm just generally bad and I'm doing the best I can. And I do not need to list my character defects. And I hate that term, character defects. I already feel plenty defective. And but courage is, that's a good one. And the level of my bad behavior is like not writing thank you letters in a proper, in the right time. I mean, it's, I mean, I was always the good girl. So anyway, this is a new way for me to look at this. And I had an epiphany the other day. I was born to take care of my mother. And ever since I was really little, felt that was my job. And the other day, she's 92. We had her over and made her talk about her finances. And she's saying, you girls just take care of this. I don't want to do this. And it just kind of hit me like a bolt of lightning. This is how she's always been. You take care of it. You be the boss. And when you're five or six, that feels pretty good. But then you're not also not very good at it. So, and my dad was always telling me I was wrong. So it's just a huge shame, character defects, all this stuff tied up. But this is a new way to look at it. I'm interested. So I'll pass.
Thank you, Wendy. Van, you're up.
Thank you, AJ, and everybody else doing service. Everybody, I'm Van. And currently, I think of myself as a person with many parts. The number one part is compulsive overeater, and I've got lots more. Alcoholic, drug addict, hoarder, people pleaser, which means I'm a big liar, and the list goes on and on. I like all of those versions of step four, and I don't like any of them because I think they're incomplete. But I worked step four the first time 35 years ago in traditional AA and was fortunate that I just couldn't get anywhere trying to do it the way it was written in the big book and the other AA literature. And my first sponsor found a questionnaire that reportedly came from a treatment center. And it was almost entirely about relationships with family of origin, girlfriends, and work relationships, and so forth. And I answered that questionnaire as best I could and got to know myself better. And at present, I feel like if a person is as mentally ill as I was 35 years ago, and even at present, any approach, any of these approaches is a good way to start. So whatever appeals to you, I'd say just go with it. And thank you. That's all I got.
Thank you, Van. Holly?
Hi, I'm Holly. I'm a compulsive overeater and a binge eater. Step four, for me, I'm not there. I've never actually done it. I've just talked to people about it, and I've read some book, you know, some chapters and books about it. But what I wanted to say about it is I hear a lot of different approaches to step four. So like some people say step four should take you a really long time, like you should have this giant brain dump that's like goes back to when you were three and, you know, should be pages and pages long. And then I've heard other people say, like, you know, don't worry about the stuff that happened when you did something when you were, you know, in elementary school. Focus on things that are affecting your life now or that you can't seem to get out of your mind or that you feel, you know, current, like things that are affecting you. So I'm not really sure how I'm going to do that. I have like kind of a pseudo sponsor right now, who's amazing. I'm sure she'll tell me what to do. But if I am right, I feel like a lot of people in the program that I've talked to kind of are really hard on themselves and have trouble with self-love. And this is a way to kind of say, here's all the things I've done wrong in my entire life. And that is not going to work well for me, I don't think, because I work really hard on trying to be nice to myself. So I'm in conflict with 4, and maybe that's why I'm not there. So thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Holly. We will now take turns reading different authors' insights on step 4 and then share our thoughts. Again, please raise your hand when you're ready for a turn and say pass when you're done. Jenny.
Beth H. I find it helpful to force myself to complete the sentence because if this happens, it means blank, fill in the blank. There's what's actually happening, then there's a story we tell ourselves about what's happening. And this is from the book, We're Not All Egomaniacs by Beth H. Pass.
Carla?
Martha Cleveland and Arliss G, I'm not sure if that's right. Someone once said that when we look outward, we see all the problems, large and small, littering the landscape. And also that when we look inward, we look to the source of them all. When we look inward, we see not only the source of our problems, but the source of our solutions too. And it's page 44 of The Alternative 12 Steps, A Secular Guide to Recovery.
Eve?
Stephanie Covington. We must be compassionate towards ourselves as we write our inventory, but we also must be willing to admit where we've been and what we've done. From page 65 of Stephanie Covington's A Woman's Way Through the 12 Steps.
Carla?
Jeffrey Munn. This step is going to give us an opportunity to process our resentments a little more thoroughly. This is done by looking at exactly why we were so hurt by whatever happened and also looking at whatever part we may have played in it. Remember that personal responsibility is a crucial part of recovery. And it's page 52 of his book, Staying Sober Without God, The Practical 12 Steps to Long-Term Recovery from Alcoholism and Addictions.
Thank you, Carla. And Eve?
From the OA 12 and 12. After writing our inventory, we review it. Have we listed everything we can think of about ourselves, destructive as well as constructive? We found that we need to write down all of our characteristics, tendencies, feelings, prejudices, and actions we have taken as a result. Some of our actions are painful for us to recall, but we write them down anyway. When we face the guilt that truthfully tells us you made a mistake, we're free of shame that falsely tells us you are a mistake. From page 36 of the OA 12 and 12.
And I'll finish. Serge Pringle. But you're starting to be more aware of the differences between being in your default mode, between being in a kind of mindless state, and being at least a little more mindful. So now in step 4, you're making use of this growing ability to shift from mindless to a more mindful state. It helps you pay more attention to patterns in your life. Page 25 from the Proactive 12 Steps, A Mindful Program for Lasting Change, 6th edition, 2021. Okay. We will now take turns reading different authors' insights on step 4 and then share our thoughts. Please raise your hand when you're ready for a turn and say pass when you're done. Jenny.
I'm not exactly sure what this character default name would be, but I sort of feel like I'm always uber responsible for stuff. And this manifests itself by, oh, it's always my fault, or I must be to blame for something. And just the other day, I was in a group setting, and the director there was just kind of being cold towards me. And I had been coming, showing up. It was at this art studio maybe four times, you know, all day long before then. And, you know, it had like some pleasant interactions, but I was like, oh my gosh, I must've done something wrong. Maybe I was giving him too many suggestions, or maybe I was doing this, or maybe I was doing that. And I was just totally internalizing like, oh my gosh, like his bad mood or the way he's treating me must be my fault. I think this is a common thing when you've grown up with like alcoholic parents. And so this is why I like Beth H's statement. Some of it, like, I wasn't exactly sure about if this happens, it means this, but I love the next sentence, which is, there's what's actually happening, and then there's the story we tell ourselves about what's happening. And I feel like I'm often doing that, like telling myself a story about like what's going on. And it's most of the time not correct. And that was just like a little example, but I can see this pattern throughout my whole life where I, you know, think I know why something's going on. And I often think it's because something that I did, but most of the time it has nothing to do with me. And that's been a really good lesson to learn that, you know, my stuff is my stuff, their stuff is their stuff, and I'm only responsible for me. Anyway, so I like that part about Beth H. And I do like a lot of these other interpretations. And I mean, with Serge Pringle starting to say, but you're starting to be more aware of the differences between being in your default mode, between being in a kind of mindless state and being at least a little more mindful. So anyway, I think that kind of fits in with the sentence from Beth H. Pass.
Thanks, Jenny. Carla?
I was kind of stuck on Beth H. as well. But the part that really got me is the, because if this happens, it means blank. I tend to, you know, find this little snippet of something that's going on and have this whole role play of just craziness of things that can happen instead of honestly looking at, you know, what a reasonable expectation of what really could it mean. So that would be something for me to really try to stop and try to get myself back into a more mindful idea of an honest thing of what could really happen instead of going on this train of just ridiculousness. So that's all I was thinking about for that. Pass.
Thank you, Carla. Dina?
I also, sorry, Dina, compulsive overeater. I also like most of them, but what struck me tonight was Jeffrey Munn's opportunity to process our resentments, exactly why we were so hurt, and then remember that personal responsibility is a crucial part of our recovery. When I started the program and started doing some step work, the responsibility was something that hit me very hard. I was just post-divorce. I was still really hurt. And to ask me now, with everything that happened, my role in it, I didn't want to acknowledge it takes two to tango. So, yeah, I had to look at my responsibility. And I started making a list, what I call in my little forgiveness book, that I mentally ask forgiveness for my ex, to my ex. And that helped me tremendously. And these past 2 weeks that I was stuck because my caregiver was so sick and I couldn't go anywhere without her help, really, I started thinking about the control and then the hurt, because I am in Hong Kong where it all happened. I'm traveling and I'm working here for a while. And it was a good healing process for me. I'm not someone that likes too positive. I hate toxic positivity. And to be able to fully acknowledge the hurt and from there begin to look at how much I've grown in the last 5 years since I was separated and then the divorce later. The 2 weeks in bed became my personal growth place and reflection and journaling. And to be confronted with the hurts and to go back to things and, yeah, one leads to the other, going down a rabbit hole, but in a positive way too. It was really, really nice for me to be able to do that, to acknowledge certain things that I tried to push away and suppress for so, so long. And I like the fact now that I can say, yes, I'm hurt. But yes, I played a role in some of them, definitely a bigger or a smaller role. But I had responsibility. And going forward, I will take the two hand in hand and with her also look at what I can change. Thank you.
Thank you, Dina. And I'm AJ. I'm a compulsive eater and sugar addict. And I want to address the OA 12 and 12, the original. I was in this program for 30-some years before I found the secular. And while I say that I'm agnostic, I'm actually an atheist, but I know that I can't prove anything one way or the other. So I sort of fall back on agnosticism. And I like the beginning of the OA 12 and 12 cited here. As writing, after writing our inventory, we review it. Have we listed everything we can think of about ourselves, destructive as well as constructive? And I have to say that the fourth steps I did in my 30-some years in traditional OA, I really didn't get the constructive part of that. I thought that I had to just list all the things that were wrong with me and none of the things that were right with me. I had to do inventory in a store, a small store where I was working. And I realized that the inventory there applies to our inventory here, which is what is on the shelf as well as what is not on the shelf. So I've really enjoyed in the secular program an emphasis on the positive and the negative in doing a step four. Wendy.
Thanks. I just have a quite specific insight, and it has to do with my daughter-in-law, and that can be a very challenging relationship. And my daughter-in-law is from a culture that's like a blood sport of just attacking and bashing each other and sarcastic comments all the time. And she's been really nasty to me. And there's a fairy tale where the evil stepdaughter toads fall out of her mouth and the good one roses and gold coins fall out of her mouth. But my daughter-in-law's actions are really kind. She's been very kind to me, and she's not done anything nasty to me. And I'm just slowly, but just, she can just make me curl up in a ball with these comments, but very thoughtful invitations, gifts. And it's like, I am slowly becoming less reactive, realizing that's her thing. And they think it's funny to attack each other. My son loves her deeply, and I have to trust my son's judgment. And my story that I tell myself that she hates me, I'm getting past that because I list, she hasn't done anything ugly. But I feel like I'm always under attack, or that I always have to be on guard because God knows what she's going to say to me next. So that feels like, you know, the story that I'm telling myself and the reality. I'm trying to really be aware of that, because so that's been a big healing for me, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Wendy. I'm going to jump back in with another thought about traditional OA. One of the reasons I do pay attention to the traditional OA comments as we are working through this part of the program is that It is our historical context for recovery. And I know that in secular OA, I have tended to kind of be a snob about not believing in God and sort of looking down on people who do. And I don't really feel that way. But I remind myself often that the original 12 steps are still valid. And if I can read them without being concerned about whether or not there's an existence of God, of a God, I get the recovery that's written into those steps. And after all, they worked for, golly, 80 or 90 years before we came up with a secular approach and helped hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people to recover. Thanks. Would someone else like to share? Yes, Carla.
Kind of on along with that note, I know I haven't gotten to this step yet, but I know that's going to be one issue for me. I've known about AA, I've known about OA for many years, but now being in a different place in my life and being an atheist, I have struggled with the original steps with the higher power and God. And I've found since I left religion, I have been very resentful and very standoffish to people who still believe. And that is going to be a big resentment that I have to deal with, because now and I keep having to remind myself, I once believed that too. So get yourself in check. So I know that's going to be definitely a long paragraph in my resentment inventory myself. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Carla. Jenny?
Yeah, I'm going to just double dip. I was looking over the Cleveland section, and where she says, when we look outward, we see all the problems, large and small, and that when we look inward, we look to the source of them. Oh, no. But when we look inward, we see not only the source of our problems, but also the source of the solutions too. I mean, not believing in a higher power, I do believe in my higher self. And I really feel like this, you know, I'm creating my problems and I can also find my solutions. And I do feel just a little bit, inspired by just what she wrote there. And also, it just kind of confirms how I feel about things. And I feel like I often find the solution to my problems by writing. And I feel like that's one of my the most important tool for me is, not the most, but one of the important ones is writing. And that's when I can find out and listen to more of my inner self pass.
Thank you, Jenny. Tam?
Hi, I'm Tam. I'm a compulsive overeater. For the last few years, I had been going to mostly traditional meetings and like one secular meeting a week. And I was trying to translate the traditional steps into a religious traditional steps. And I've always done my step work based on traditional steps. And then, I don't know, maybe like 6 or 9 months ago, I started going to mostly secular meetings. And I started paying a lot more attention to what the secular steps are and how instead of trying to take the religiosity out of the steps, but still keep the same framework and structure, the secular steps just completely rewrite the step, you know? So like, I mean, step four is pretty much similar across, but you know, like step three about like turning your will and life over to a higher power, you know, I know like Jeffrey Munn says, we committed to a program of recovery. And it really opened my eyes to the power of secular OA and the way that, well, secular OA, AA, the way that completely rewriting the steps just, it doesn't leave me wondering about conscious contact with a higher power in step 11. You know, it says, we started meditating, period. And I find that really important. Another thing is so I'm also an alcoholic and I have very much an alcoholic personality of being an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. And so I don't have a problem like just looking at my defects of character. But I know other people do, and that's why there are all these approaches, which is wonderful. But one of the things I hear from OA people, not infrequently, is that I didn't harm anyone. You know, the worst thing I could have done was, you know, some pitsy little thing. And it feels to me like a lot of times when I talk with people who are saying this, that they're not thinking about their codependency or, you know, how controlling there might be in their kids' lives, you know, that there's so much more than just the hard and fast kinds of issues of harm that an alcoholic might do. And I think it's important for us to look at those as well. That's all. Thanks.
Thanks, Tam. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you all for participating in this group. Together, we get better. If you'd like to hear recordings from past Alternative Step discussion meetings, you can click the Alternative 12 Steps page on secularovereaters.org.
Thank you for joining us today. If you'd like to support our efforts, please visit secularovereaters.org and consider making a donation.